This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Let's get into this conversation now around informal settlements. The state of informal settlements in South Africa, as well as the impact they may have on the value of property. So we're going to go and interrogate exactly what are they? Because they're defined as housing areas that are often illegally built on municipal land. These settlements in South Africa are found in a variety of areas and are home to a large percentage of the country's impoverished population. The Langrang settlement contains roughly about 2,000 shacks and is home to about 5,000 residents. So how many informal settlements do we actually have in South Africa? Are they legal? Where do they come from? Who controls where they are placed? And if they are placed in your neighborhood, what impact do they have on you as a resident living in that neighborhood? Let's get into that matter right now with Riley Mambuela, who is a CEO and the founder of SA Housing and Infrastructure Fund. We also have Nontu Chulwane, who is executive director of Mutewo Construction Group. Where do they come from? Why are they there? How many do we have? What value do they have? What impact do they have on your property value? Are they there because of inadequate access to housing? And why do governments continue to allow them to persist? And then why do you also find that in some instances, we've got the likes of the Red Ants that then forcibly remove people, whereas other informal settlements are able to hold their structures? Who informs that narrative? There's another concept that I learned about earlier on, and that is around shack lordism, where it's all being traded. In fact, there's a whole big underworld, you know, way and an ecosystem around that. Well, joining us this afternoon, thank you so much to the both of you, Nontu, as well as Riley, for joining us on Power Lunch. A very good afternoon to you, Riley.
Good afternoon, good afternoon to your listeners, and thank you for inviting us.
And a very good afternoon to you, Nontu.
A very good afternoon to you and to all the listeners. Again, thank you for having us.
And of course, we are waiting for our third guest this afternoon, which we will tell you all about that. But Riley, let's start off with you, perhaps. Informal settlements, what are they? Let's start from the basics. Where do they come from? What are they? Hi, Riley, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Informal settlements are basically informal settlements, as per the words, you know, as you're saying it. And essentially, in Gauteng alone, there's a backlog of about 1.2 million people that are still looking for housing, and obviously government cannot be able to fiscally be able to give each and every person a house on their own. They need private sector to help them, but they also need people to also build for themselves. And the informal settlements are then caused by the fact that some people don't have money to build their own houses, and what they then do, they then go and if they see a piece of land, they end up occupying that land that might be owned by either, in most cases, owned by government, state-owned entities, NGOs, and sometimes by private individuals where people will invade the land and basically do a settlement that is not formalized. And the informal settlement basically means that the land that the people are residing in has got no town planning approval for housing or any other town planning matter. And in this case, you find that there's no infrastructure that is installed, meaning that there's no water, sewer, and electricity. And at some instance, then government comes at a later stage to sort of formalize the area afterwards. And what needs to happen is that you need to do the town planning first, and put the infrastructure, then place the people. So that's informal settlement.
So when it comes to how many do we have in the country, There are so many conservative estimates around how many households actually live in informal settlements. Some say over 1.4 million households. Some say between 2.9 and 3.6 million people living in informal settlements in South Africa. How many do we actually have?
I don't have the specific number because obviously I don't work for government. They've done that research. But from us as a private sector, our numbers that we've seen are basically saying that in the country, there are definitely more than 4 million people that are staying in informal settlements in the country, not in Gauteng.
Mm.
So that's how that's the number. And you know, we have basically declared housing as the fund as a crisis in the country, and we cannot just only blame government, but we are saying that we all need to come in. NGOs, private sector, and government must come in and find a way to make sure that we deal with this issue, because this is an element that can end up being causing other uprisings that we've seen in other countries, being student accommodation, fees,
yeah.
Fighting, and all of those things. So the that's the situation. So I think we need to really attend into this matter as a matter of urgency to make sure that we can find ways to assist.
Nontu, you know, as we're speaking about breaking it down, because I do believe if we're going to tackle a subject matter, we need to be able to break it down to its genesis. Informal settlements themselves, what makes it, where do they find, who identifies the land? Do we know? How is that land identified? Does a person automatically walk past and then they say, ha, there we go, there's a vacant piece of land. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tell my community members, let's go plant it there. Who starts this process of saying, we've spotted land that is vacant, let's move in?
Our research recently has actually shown that it's often a very organized way of identifying the land and moving people in. In fact, in certain instances, you'll find that the land is usually up for sale, and there's usually word of mouth of there's a stand for sale in that area.
Mm.
It's a very organized business, usually. You spoke of Sheikh Lordism. Sometimes you'll find that an individual identifies the land, builds the informal settlement, and then rents it out to people and becomes the landlord. So in most cases, it's vacant land. What we've seen mainly targeted has been state-owned land, which means there's often some research or knowledge associated to the formation of the informal settlements. And obviously the knowledge of the difficulty of then evicting the people from the land that is often invaded and on which informal settlements are then constructed. But it's often also in areas that are close to work opportunities. So you'll find it in major cities and medium-sized towns where people actually are migrating in for work. You'll often find where there are factories and so on, which is why Rally's point of that large-scale housing delivery is directly linked to then finding a solution to these informal settlements. Because oftentimes they're not. It's people who really need a place to stay and are there trying to get close to work opportunities.
You know, as you're speaking about how it's usually a highly organized venture, Riley, as this highly organized venture, based on research and to your knowledge as well, if vacant land is to be identified and that land belongs to government or it's municipal land, does it not point to who in the municipality works there who's able to give people the insights that, hey guys, this land is vacant?
So basically, the thing is so sensitive and quite fragile at this point in time. And I do know that the Department of Human Settlement in different provinces, and I'm not speaking on behalf of government, but being in the sector, I've heard them speaking about the fact that they've created certain units that are actually starting to look at this thing of land invasion. As you could see in Gauteng, most of the areas like in the south of Johannesburg, there's been a lot of land invasion taking place. But just speaking from our point of view and our experience, so I mean, I'm sure some listeners would have seen in the last 3 weeks, our fund was in the middle of the news for a full 3 weeks where we were. There was a land that was being invaded at Rubber Ridge.
Yes.
And essentially, it was a tense situation where obviously the land was privately owned in this case. But what we've researched is that they are definitely, and I need to be careful here and just make sure that we are all on the safe side, but definitely cartels mm-hmm. that are very sophisticated, that are well-funded, that are understanding what's going on the ground. And the normal person on the street who's really, really looking for a housing just follows the crowd, but not knowing exactly where the end game is. And in this case, the end game is where you find that the cartels end up owning 70% of that land and selling it off to individuals, and they're not going to be able to even give them title deeds. And a couple of years later, you get a court order, the red ends come, they take the people out, and then people have lost the money. And okay. they then move to the next piece of land. So yeah. in cases where the land is owned by government, because these cartels are very sophisticated, in South Africa, we've got a world-class deed search concept where you just press a button of an F number, of an area, and it will tell you who owns the property. So, of course, if you've got money, you'll be able to do that research. So I wouldn't even think as far as the municipalities, workers being involved, I don't know. But because of what we've researched is that these guys are very sophisticated. They'll mm-hmm. definitely be able to know even when government buys the land and when they're selling the land, and they'll do their work.
Well, Riley, let's go there then. Because your land was privately owned land, and you know, the reporting that was done based on the people of Rubber Ridge, that story that was painted, the day that they came in, I think it was a weekend, it was a Saturday, where they started having the altercations with law enforcement and the Nyala had to be brought in and the likes. I remember because I was working that day and I had to cover that story. And it was said consistently that this is privately owned land. Who tipped off the people that your land, which you say is privately owned, could be invaded? If you're saying it's a cartel, do you know who is part of the cartel?
So obviously, at this point in time, you'll see that that specific land is it's all been settled in terms of the fight between the fund and the NIMFU who owns the land and the community. We've since fenced the place out, but what I can say now is that the land is still sub jure in terms of we're still busy negotiating with different stakeholders of what's going to happen and also what has happened. But what I can tell you now is that you need to be on the ground. You need to speak to different community members, including people that may have started the fire, and make sure that you have an understanding with them and find a way to do it.
Yeah.
I think at this point in time, this thing is very sensitive in such a way that I think we need to leave it to the law enforcement. Mm.
But let me ask you this though, Riley. Do you know who it is? I'm not going to ask you who it is once more time, but I'm going to ask you, are you aware of who those people are that chose to organize community members to invade and go into your land and have that altercation happen with the police in Rubber Ridge? Do you know who those people are?
At this point in time, we've opened up a case of trespassing.
Yeah.
So I think that's where we can leave it at for now, because the case, the law enforcement are still left to investigate. Mm. But what I can tell you is that we have settled with different parties and different community members to allow us the time and the space to get the right and get the infrastructure into the place and be able to help our people to accelerate delivery of affordable housing.
But in that case, then, Nonto, to have to bring it in. If, for example, we're having settlements and the likes that need to be, that are still sensitive of nature, what's to say that the next person whose land gets invaded and they go through the same sentiments where people say, actually, we want this land, we want to actually erect informal settlements in this land, what empowerment tool is there for those private landowners who are saying, but guys, what are you doing on my land? Especially if you're saying that this thing is well organized, where is the organization coming from?
You see, the organization is coming from group leaders. It's normally, just like Riley saying, a cartel. But the solution for the landowners, obviously, is jointly with governments, human settlements and municipalities to start planning housing initiatives that almost are linked to where people actually want to settle. You'll find that it's normally close to transport routes. Obviously, if the bus is dropping me off down the road and I work just two blocks down, I would rather live close by. So the more vacant land you have along areas that have got such economic activities, the more likely you see invasion. So when you actually see the informal settlements and the patterns, you can almost see they're all structured in that manner. It's people simply just trying to get close to work, and so on. So the solution for the landowners is really linked to working with the municipality, in a structured approach.
Yeah, but then does the municipality come to the party? Does it? And then I hear you. But in often case, so for example, Rale is a typical, so to say, illustration where you would say that there are papers to show that this land is privately owned land. If you're to work with the municipality and there are people currently occupying your land, does the municipality come to your rescue and on time, therefore?
Well, that's where then we need to be having the conversation to say to municipalities, can they come to the party? In fact, these occurrences should be teaching them lessons in terms of their planning for human settlements, to say, look, maybe we're doing projects in areas where people actually don't want to be settling, and here are lessons for us in terms of where we should be buying our land, where we should actually be planning for people's settlements, and so on and so on. And if they haven't been coming to the party as much as they require to, I think then these are lessons for them to start paying more attention to these kinds of things. I think that's the only way we'll even start to see a decrease in the number of informal settlements and land invasions that are currently taking place.
What do we do?
If I may just add in, I think she's quite right. I think the other lessons that could happen here is that at the end of the day, guys, let's be honest, our people want housing. Of course, you can't just have a piece of land. What we learned at Robert Ridge is that people were saying, but this land has been sitting here for 20 years and we've got no houses. Some of the honest people that were not part of the cartels. And they were quite right. So in this case, this land was owned by foreigners that had left the country and essentially just put it as an investment. And our people needed the land. So we came in as a fund and we've only been in that land put our investment in the last 6 months. And we were just starting with the town planning processes, because we also saw that the land was just sitting there vacant. Mm. But I think from the municipality's point of view, it will be important for them to start beefing up on the town planning processes so that when there are vacant pieces of land, especially the strategic piece of land that she's mentioning, that are closer to where people work and play and all of that, those lands should be prioritized, where they must do special committees to deal with SPLUMA. SPLUMA is a process of town planning where you prioritize. You don't take 3 years to get the right to move people there. You find a way to say, Department of Planning of Roads, you don't have 6 months to comment about roads. You know, can you not do that in 30 days? Because it's possible for you to do it in 30 days. And Department of EIA, can you not take a year but take 6 months so that we can get the town planning process happening quicker and give our people housing? We cannot run away from a point of that people want housing. It's the same thing as that kids want to go, students want to go to school. We can fight them with rubber bullets and do that, but they say we don't have money, we want some money to go to school and study. Some of the honest people that are not part of the cartels are saying that we want housing. We actually don't even want housing in. We want a piece of land to build our own houses. So I think the municipality can learn to find ways to amend the SPLUMA and maybe have special committees or so that town planning happens quick and we can deliver housing to our people quicker.
What impact, or are we doing enough to solve the issue around informal settlements in South Africa? Or have government, in order for them to almost distract from the housing backlog as well as the delivery of RDP houses to the people, have they allowed informal settlements to be erected so that they, in their own informal way, can address, in inverted commas, the housing crisis in this country? Will we ever see an end to informal settlements in South Africa? Or does it serve government's mandate in actually providing people houses to a point where government will not do away with informal settlements? 0861-987-000. That is a conversation we are having this afternoon. Let's start off with you, Thabo Moyilodi. Hi, Thabo.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks. And you? Go
I'm
ahead.
Good. Let's be frank and think about this issue. When will it end? Because of clear space, you are giving people houses with the issue of unemployment. These people are not working.
Mm.
From private sector, they have to go and buy land. They have to put in water and electric infrastructure and go seek the money to build these people houses. These people don't work. How will they be able to pay rent and taxes? How will they pay Eskom? Tomorrow coming again, Eskom says it's losing money. It wants to go and cut off the electricity. Instead of government and private sector coming up with a way of looking for money, creating jobs, so that the economy can start to run, so people can be able to build for themselves. And the government should encourage the private sector that is owning land to donate land, so people can get land, and people of which are working, the economy is running, to build the houses for themselves and be able to pay recent taxes.
Yeah.
But in the way that the government is going now, it clearly shows the South Africans that you must depend on us so that the vote can keep on coming. That's my take.
Thanks very much for that, Thabo and Mamelodi. Just to speak to what Thabo is saying, does it serve the agenda of government that indeed, when it comes to informal settlements, this issue is not dealt with holistically? I remember it was a DA government that was being criticized for allowing the erection of informal settlements during the tenure of the DA, particularly in the city of Johannesburg. And there was huge criticism from the likes of the ANC saying, why did you allow this to happen? And one wonders, did they allow this to happen so that people don't have to look at them and say, we want houses? That, you know, it's a form of distraction, covering up for our losses, covering up for our incompetencies by allowing people to erect informal settlements so that they don't have to account to people for why they have not given people any form of formal housing as yet.
No, you see, I don't think that is the case. I think it's actually the opposite, because the issue of the formation of informal settlements is actually a very old issue. It's not something that's only just started now. I think for as long as we can remember, informal settlements have been part of our societies and communities. But I think that government, if anything, is at least trying to control the situation to at least still afford people that opportunity to still have a dignified life. We've seen in a lot of the major cities, governments moving in to say, fine, you are in these informal settlements. The least that we can still do is to ensure that you still have got access to basic services and you still then are able to have a dignified life in the form of ablutions, the provision of water and electricity. So I think it's a worldwide problem that the South Africa also has almost had to embrace. So whilst yes, trying to work on ensuring that informal settlements don't increase beyond now by programs such as the upgrade of existing informal settlements, but there's also that area where government is accepting that we do have some informal settlements with us, it's quite a large number, and we probably will not be able to solve it overnight. So at least let's make sure that people are comfortable while living there so that it's not total.
I got you. Nontu, please take a hold. We're going to come back and expound further on this conversation. And maybe you can educate me, Power Family. Why is it that I don't see informal settlements being erected in the middle of Sandton City? Why is it always there, far away? Anyways, hopefully you get to give me insight on that. It's Half Past One. Let's check in with your latest in Power News.
Call Faith on 0861-987-000.
It's about 27 minutes to go before the top of the hour. We're having a conversation around the reality of informal settlements in South Africa, as well as the impact that they have on property values. We're also looking at where they come from. Why are they there? How are they there? Who controls them? Who controls the land? We've heard now that there are cartels, for example, who go into vacant land and rent out these stands to people without giving them the title deed through actual having settlements that are done with other members as well. So there is a cartel when it comes to this issue. But at the center of it is how people need housing, adequate housing. And let me pose this one to you, Power Fam. How do we do away with informal settlements in the country? Or should we be doing away with informal settlements in South Africa? Should we be doing away with informal settlements in South Africa? And how does that look like? We're still in conversation there with Rale Mampuelo, who's from, who's the CEO and founder of SA Housing and Infrastructure Fund, as well as Nontu Chulwane, who is the executive director of Motewa Construction Group. And of course, it's your conversation. So 0861987000, that is the number to dial. Let's go to Redabot. Hi, Pumlani.
Madam Unjani.
Yeah, Pilunjani Puti. Go ahead.
I'm great. Thanks, Sissy. If I'm poor, I don't have a job and I have an asset, I would sell that asset in order for me to get by, right? Mm. So it could be a car, it could be a house, it doesn't matter. Remember, those houses, they don't have yard. So it's not like the people can live off the land. Do you follow? So a lot of people, what they do is, after there's a moratorium on for selling, but once that moratorium elapses, people tend to flog those houses. And then they go build elsewhere. So in a capitalist society, if you do not have a viable skill, you're going to be poor. You're destined to be poor. When I say skill, I don't mean a degree on education.
Yeah.
You need a skill to sell. If you don't have, that's the problem. People who live in townships, I mean, not in townships, in informal settlements, they don't have a viable skill to sell. That's what we need to fix. Okay, thank you. Cheers. Bye.
Thank you very much for that, Pumlani in Roodepoort. David in Rustenburg, hi.
Good afternoon, Faith. How are you?
Very well, thanks. And you, sir? Go ahead.
Yes, I'm okay, Derek. I wanted to just answer one of your questions to say, how are we ever going to end informal settlements? And I'll tell you about the Rustenburg context, because I now speak as the spokesperson for the local municipality.
Mm.
Just last week, we unveiled a shopping mall, which was built at a cost of about 600 million. People know that there's this new shopping complex in Rustenburg. We are already in a process of building over 1,000 RDP houses because we have identified housing as a need. But the reality of the matter is that every single day, you've got people coming to Rustenburg in search of better economic opportunities, despite the fact that there's been a bloodbath in the mining sector. And the reality is that government is working very hard, particularly through the process of the IDP. But it seems like for some reason that all of us cannot still figure out quite correctly, there is this ongoing need for housing, particularly in middle towns, as you say, and growing cities.
Mm.
People come to Rustenburg year in, year out, despite the fact that jobs are being shed in the mining sector. But these other growth sectors, which contribute to the economic growth of Rustenburg, now also contribute indirectly or directly to people now deciding to leave their places of residence to come into Rustenburg in search of economic opportunities. And of course, if you want a job, you need a house. And this is how now you've got this informal settlement mushrooming. As I told you now, before COVID hit, we had already begun a process of township establishment of about 7 townships of the 14 informal settlements that we have identified. But the need does never end.
The need clearly doesn't end, Werner David. And, you know, Nontes, I'm listening to how there is a need for housing. That is not even the premise of it. There's clearly a need for housing. However, in that, when we're looking at informal settlements, does it address that need for housing, especially at a sustainable level? And if it does not address the need for sustainable housing, which will go with all the other resources that are attached to adequate housing, why are we struggling to find and give people these alternatives to it? And is there an alternative at the stage?
Look, at the moment, we don't see an alternative. I mean, as contractors in the industry, we're still building your long-term brick and mortar that Rally correctly said takes forever to even get off the ground. And while you are trying to get it off the ground, sometimes even the land identified for the very same development is already invaded. So the alternative is exactly where government now needs to come in with solutions that are different, quicker solutions, you know, alternative technology for building of structures, because we've seen what people in informal settlements, you don't find a lot of brick and mortar.
Mm.
It's people just wanting temporary accommodation that's comfortable, just close to work opportunities. So we don't see government having yet come up with this alternative. And I think the outcry is there. The formation of informal settlements is probably as a result of there not being an alternative at the moment.
Rally, won't you just school us in terms of exactly when are you able to take down an informal settlement and call the red ants and completely demolish the place versus when you're not? And I'm just saying this based on even the laws that govern when do you remove people, when is a house, when is a settlement or a structure regarded now as a house that you now removing a person from their house, and when is a structure regarded as just a structure, meaning you now have got the right to still remove that structure away? What are the laws that govern when to remove people, when to not remove people?
I think I'll answer that just now. What I wanted to also just add in was that there's a housing crisis, and we all know and we are aware of it. And clearly that requires an outside box approach, you know, thinking out of the box approach, yeah. And that needs to happen urgently. But we must also understand that when construction takes place, it's going to create jobs. So the one of the callers said that people don't have jobs, and I agree. But remember, construction has also been identified as one of the industries that is going to help us in us recovering from the pandemic. And so it's very important that people understand that when construction takes place, there will be an overall economic development. And we as Sahib are obviously bringing new affordable housing, unique technologies, and we've done things like in Rudeport last year, we moved 300 people using what Nonko is referring to as alternative building technology,
yeah.
Where in 2 weeks we managed to move people from, it's literally a year ago, from tented community into what we call an ABT, alternative building technology, within a space of 2 weeks. So there are options and stuff that is happening. But at the same time, it's very important that we understand that government is not just sitting, they have built a lot of houses. And I don't think we'll be able to get rid of slums totally, 100%, because anywhere in the world, there are always slums. But to answer your question in terms of when can you remove people and when can you not remove them and how long does it take, there are two things. So, for example, in Rubber Ridge, we were dealing with what we call trespassing, and then there's also what we call land invasion. So, fortunately, we were not dealing with land invasion. If we were dealing with land invasion, it's when somebody has already been in your land for more than 72 hours or so. And I stand to be corrected, but understanding that for more than 72 hours, if they sit and stay in your land,
yeah.
And that's why these cartels are aware of that, and that's why they'll push and push to erect some kind of structure that they won't even sleep in.
That's why overnight, so they do it even overnight. In the middle of the night, yeah. You find these structures being yeah. erected.
Exactly. Then they know you're going to be dancing in court for 3 years to get a court order to remove them. In 3 years, they've made money. They've sold the land. You then bring the red ends. You move the people. Then they're gone. They're nowhere to be found. The reason why Rubber Ridge was so tense is because we were avoiding a land invasion that we don't want to dance in court for 3 years.
Mm.
We want to build the houses quickly for our people and put infrastructure. We then dealt with the issue of trespassing. So we tried to respond as quickly as possible. We got private companies that deal with this type of issues. In this case, we're a Fidelity special unit that deals with land invasion. And they had to deal with the situation of trespassing. And within the space of a week, we had managed to move the people as and when they build. We're taking them out.
Mm.
And we managed to put a fence across. So the cartels and other people, and even the normal people that are looking for housing, they know about all these laws. They're actually smarter than some of us.
Yeah, so 72 hours, it's considered as land invasion. And once your land has been invaded, that's where you have to get a court order to remove them. A court order that could take you 3 years.
And not only a court order that can take you 3 years,
yeah.
You also have to find an alternative land for people, for them.
Even if you are not part of bringing them to your land.
Exactly. You must find them an alternative place. So they know that. And so I think what's going to happen is that, as I said earlier on, we need to come up with out-of-the-box thinking,
yeah.
So that we can accelerate delivery of affordable housing to our people using different formats that include ABT. And I must say, government has come forth. I mean, I know that the Housing Development Agency has put out a proposal for people to bring ABT proposal on what they have so that they can speed up this thing. Government has released a rapid land release program where they are saying that they want stands that are savings, that developers must bring them to them, and that they're going to give to people to build their own houses. So I don't think the government is not doing anything. They are doing something, and anywhere in the world, you will always be in a situation where there will always be slums. So you can never be able to satisfy everybody. But we really need to work hard to accelerate delivery of affordable housing in South Africa. And we are trying to do that as a private sector, as SAHIV.
Yeah. And Nontu, you know, just picking up from what Raleigh was saying around when it's considered land invasion, when it's considered a trust trespassing, what are the laws regarding the structure? There's somewhere that I read that there is a law where if the roof is not on yet, then you can still demolish the structure. But if the roof is on, then it's considered as housing. What is that? What is that? Just, can you just provide us clarity around when to remove or when not to remove?
I must say I'm not really aware of the structure parts at the moment, but I am aware that the demolition must only happen after you've received a court order. So whether the roof would need to have been on or not, I'm not aware of the detail of you know what the law then allows for in that case.
0861 987 000. Wow, do we do away, or do we even do away with informal settlements in South Africa? Do they have a place in our society? Do they serve a specific purpose? Because if they do not have resources, then as the South African Human Rights Commission was saying, it's a human right violation. But is there an alternative at this point? Let's go straight to the phone lines. And thank you so much for all of you for holding. Let's go to Letlhogonolo from Pretoria. Hi, Letlhogonolo.
Hi, Faith. Good afternoon.
Hi, go ahead, Papa.
Otherwise, you can't attend to our problems, especially housing in South Africa.
Letlhogonolo, your signal is a little bit bad. Please just try to get a clearer signal and then we'll come back to you. Let's go to Atrichville. Sakhele, hi.
Hi, Faith. How's it?
Very well, thanks. And you, sir? Go ahead.
I'm good. With the issue of slums, most people who reside in Mshangoville, in Atrichville, they are from other provinces. And what normally happens is they are here for employment reasons, and they would build their own houses wherever they are from. And when they move from Atrichville, they sell their shack and they move to their... they move back to their respective provinces, if I might put it that way. But again, with the issue of land, I've seen it happening, and I was attending one of the meetings this the past Sunday. They occupy land, and they are very organized. They've got their own lawyers, and they know the acts that are governing that land in terms of municipality acts. They will sell that land for a minimum of 30,000. You will sign a petition. They will submit it to the nearest municipality. Then those people will occupy that land.
Wait, and Zakhele, you're moving too fast for me. Who's the they? So okay. These you're moving way too fast. Because I'm trying to understand how this thing works. So the cartel, so to say, the ones who spot the land, they come in with their lawyers.
They come in with their lawyers.
And then what do they do?
They would identify the piece of land that they will be occupying, then they will start selling that piece of land. And when the owner comes and they start claiming their land, then they would submit the necessary documents that in terms of why they should occupy that piece of land, because they've done it with one of the old farms just right next to Nexa in Atrichville in Talendava. And they were selling that piece of land for about 50,000 per stand. And the people who normally buy those piece of land, it's not as if they don't have money. They do have money. I don't think we have a housing issue as per se. I think the influx of population in Gauteng, it's beyond control for the government because of now what happens is they would buy that piece of land and they would build huge houses. Believe in me, the houses there are very huge.
Gotcha, Zakhele, then Atrichville. Africa Borwa on Power FM 987 saying, hi Faith, in our area the informal settlers burn tires and block our roads, demanding service delivery from government. They illegally connect electricity and destroy our electricity infrastructure, transformers and the like. Tabang in Rustenburg, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Very well, thanks. And you, sir? Go ahead.
Okay, so before I can make my comment, that one thing that pains me is always these land invaders. Ne? They don't go to those prestigious suburbs and everything. They come to us who bought the bond housing locations. That's what one thing. They take everything from us, free electricity. That's one thing that pains us. My comment is that this thing, these guys, when they invade land, they know what they are doing. They've got lawyers and everything. And then one of the people that we're not aware of that's one example that I got, is like the guys from also the taxi industry, when they want to maximize their taxi routes and everything, yeah, what they do, they go to the municipalities and they have got their people inside. And then they will tell them which land is vacant and all those things. Oh. And they organize the people and do in vain. And then the taxi industry, they know that they're going to make the route and everything. This one is one of the things that I've learned. I used not to believe it until someone inside tells me this.
Yeah, no, listen, because I'm trying to figure out, Wena Thabang, and thank you so much for that. Who's got the information? Who are these they? Who are the cartels? How do they get access to this land? Hey, no, you know, when we, or really, rather, when we're speaking about the impact that informal settlements have on the property value, have we explored in its entirety, and what impact is that?
Well, I think a practical example was that at Robert Ridge, right next door, the gentleman is quite correct. There were people that were coming to us, the landowners, and saying, please, please remove these people. I'm still paying 15,000 rand bond every month. And once I've got this check next to me, it's going to depreciate the value of my house. Mm. So I think it's very important for us to find the balance, because you must also remember, we are busy now talking about what we call integrated development plan for our people, so that people can also stay closer to work and social amenities.
Yeah.
So the issue of house values going down is also debatable. But I think people will need to understand that there are possibilities that you might be in an area where you'll have to mix with social different people of different walks of life. But if you look at places like the UK and the US, when they do a settlement, call it a waterfall city as an example there by Mall of Africa, you've got different estates. You've got estates where there are houses for 50 million rand, mm, all the way to a townhouse of 3 million. But then you've got shopping centers and amenities that everybody's sharing. So what we need to do, we need to think out of the box. And when we do this integrated development, we make sure that from the outside, the properties should look almost the same. Inside, and the sizes will be the different. So if you go to the UK, sometimes you'll find that there's a development, but you can never even be able to see the difference between a social housing and a unit where somebody's staying in an apartment.
Yeah.
So there are creative ways of dealing with this so that we can retain development. And you see it in Waterfall. We some people there are having problems where they are coming from a 50 million rand house, but they're going to meet with somebody who stays in a 2,000 rent 2 million rand house, and in the same Woolworths. And it's working. And we need to compromise as well, because we can't be selfish and use the old apartheid way of housing our people. So we also need to meet each other halfway. But I think it's quite important that we start thinking out of the box,
yeah,
and come up with different housing solutions. But the other last thing that I wanted to make as a point is that it's important to engage with the community. So, for example, there are also, besides the cartel, well-organized community organizations like Abatali Basom Jondol, who are fighting for the rights of their dignity of having housing. Those structures are quite good, because with those type of people, you are able to engage with them and understand what they need, and you can be able to give solutions.
Mm.
So I must also just mention that there are also well-organized structures like that are fighting for human rights for housing.
Well, speaking about finding alternative ways to housing and also thinking outside of the box, Nontu, social housing, could this be an alternative solution and a sustainable one?
It is one of the solutions. I mean, social housing provides exactly what we are saying. It's a program where you can build for people in areas, in fancy areas where previously they couldn't have been able to live, but at a very affordable rental rate. So, yes, it is a solution, but again, a longer-term solution, and its development needs to also then start happening at a rapid level. So at a policy level, it would appear that government is probably maybe 80% covered, besides the fact that they still need to come in with some sort of quicker alternative building methods. So at a policy level, it looks like the solutions are there. But it's at an implementation and planning level, at a municipal level, where if certain plans were fast-tracked, one, and if the planning was a bit different in terms of where do we drive our human settlements development, maybe, and just maybe, that could start to form part of the solution towards us start to see a decrease perhaps in informal settlements.
0861987000. It's all about informal settlements. Is there an alternative to this? We're saying social housing, is there? But it looks as though there may not be appetite quick enough to ensure implementation. In the meantime, these structures are being erected and some land is being invaded. 7 to 2 hours, and then you spend your time in court. Kiamogetswe, we're in Brits. Hi.
Hey,
how are you, Papa? Go ahead.
Sharp, man. I face you. For as long as black people in this country, they don't have land, there will always be informal settlements. You know why? Because without land, you are nothing in this country, my sister. Let's just be frank and honest. What hurts the most is that 80% of residents of this country are black people, but yeah, still they don't have land up until today. Why? And stuff like that, my sister. You know? And then in those informal settlements, majority of those residents, Baba Nangoteng, the government employees members, whereby they can't afford RDPs, they can't do anything. The only solution is to buy land and build your own your own house. For as long as government can build RDPs for free for the residents of this country, why can't the PIC, because government employees are the contributors to the PIC funds, why can't the PIC build houses for those government employees, and those government employees, they can buy those houses for an affordable price?
I got you, Kemuchet and Brez. Let's go to Atishville. Hi, Raputi.
Good afternoon, Faith, and good afternoon to your guests.
Yes, sir.
And now, Bona, we've lost the plot from the onset. You can't put the horse before the cart. You say, cart, please. Cut, please pull horse. No. And the thing, free housing. How did we ever imagine that we're going to sustain this?
Leish.
For who? How?
It was the promises when Araputi they were made to us.
Yes, these are promises. Unrealistic. And then we let them up. For what? Responsibility. Personal responsibility. Yeah, sometimes government too much.
Yeah, completely. Let's go to Rustenburg. Simon, you're currently dealing with a land grab problem in Sosanguve. Hi.
Yeah, I've got this problem currently, which is the land that I'm facilitating for development, and people have invaded that land, and now the owner resorted to sell the land to the government. Now the government doesn't have money to buy the land, so that it will keep the people on the land.
So now the people are on the land now?
Hello?
The people are on the land right now?
Yes, the people are on the land, yes.
You, Rally, are you able to help and assist? What must Simon do?
Well, I mean, obviously, exactly what I said earlier on. They're going to have to go and dance in the court for 3 years, get the red ends to take the people out. But the best thing in this case is to find a way to say, can they speak to government to create a budget for the next financial year and maybe do a program with what they call informal settlement program that some of the entities of government have. And there are ways to also still help people if they're already on the land where you do informal settlement upgrading. So I think that's what the gentleman can look at.
Yeah, well,
it's an unfortunate situation.
Yeah, it certainly is. As soon as you say he's going to have to dance around the court for 3 years, I'm thinking to dance around the court for 3 years when Arali is money.
Money.
You, Moses in, let's go to first in Kempton Park. Khopolang, hi.
Hi, Faith. I just changed my question. So I just want to understand from you just the difference between land invasion and trespassing, because it seems like the 72 hours, does it mean if I'm away in Cape Town, can somebody come into my house, live in my house for maybe 3 days, and then after that I need to get a court order to get him out of my house, or is it just about vacant land? Just want to understand the difference.
Good question. Rally?
Yeah, I think there's an article that had come out from a house actually in Sandton, actually, funny enough, where the court had made a ruling that in a posh suburb where occupants were won the case,
where they stayed in a house where I think the foreigners were owning the house and they left. And because they stayed for more than those hours, and in this case was obviously a couple of months or years, and the court ruled that the person has to allow the people to stay there or find them a house. So, yes, it could be in and for 3 months. When you come back, yeah, if somebody moves into your house, the court has made a ruling on that. And this was on the around the 12th of April this year. So the headline read, occupants win a court battle to stay in a hijacked home in a posh Johannesburg suburb.
So basically, lock everything up, ensure that there's a gate around it, security. Get a dog. Like, there's nothing else that you can do. Oh, I wish we could have more time with this conversation, but certainly it needs more unpacking as we look at what is the solution to informal settlements in this country, and can we really do away with them? Social housing, for example, has come up as an alternative, but clearly there is a lot of appetite, but maybe not a lot of political will to implement. Keep those conversations going. Thank you so much to Rally Mapuele, who's from the Infrastructure Fund, as well as the director of Motheo Construction Group, Nontu Chulwane, for joining us in this conversation.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.